So I just have to say that this episode is a marketing masterclass for farmers. I have the honor in speaking to Julian van der Net. He has about 28 years experience in the agri sector, particularly in marketing and sales, and has held numerous executive positions in the private sector, government, and in development agencies. I met Julian about 2 years ago at one of the industry meetings, and every time he spoke, I remember just asking myself, who is this man? Because he literally knew everything and anything about the industry. Honestly, this episode doesn't do justice to the knowledge and experience that Julian has. However, he drops some serious gems that we can all learn from about the agri industry, particularly where marketing is concerned. And so I didn't waste any time in this conversation. We just went straight into it, and I really hope that you find value in what Julian had to say. Let's take a listen.
My name is Mbali Noko, and welcome to the Mbali Noko podcast. I'm a farmer, and I created this podcast to discuss all things agriculture. I will be interviewing and having in-depth conversations with industry experts such as farmers, scientists, agronomists, agri-tech specialists, to policymakers and investors. Basically, anyone you can think of in agriculture and across its value chain. So let's dive right into today's episode.
So basically, Mbali, I think which is very important, which people miss, and that's the three principles if you start any project, any farm. It's actually life, but you, first of all, you need a vision. You need to, people don't look too far in the future. They plan for today and tomorrow. And I think it's very important to have a three-month plan, a six-month plan, a one-year plan, a five. Just go even in your head or write it down somewhere. Secondly, if you don't have a strategy to implement this vision, it becomes a dream. It just will always stay there. So you need to have some sort of plan how you're going to improvise this. And then thirdly, is I think is very important, is sometimes people don't understand their own shortcomings. Maybe you're a brilliant farmer, but you don't know how to do a business plan. Or the numbers don't just work for you. Or you're not very good with, maybe the, you're good with numbers, but not good with the farming aspect. And I think that's where if you need the tools to implement that, and that's where you need help and you need mentorship. And if you realize that you're not going to do this very well yourself, you get somebody else to help you. So I think that's a good starting point in any business. And that's what I found in my life, what we used to do. So a little bit about myself is I started on the market. I studied a little bit. I studied law. And then I went into the marketing environment and we moved to Botswana. And while in Botswana, I did some consulting work for the Kellogg Foundation, the USAID. And we did a project for the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization, the FAO. And from there, I went to the Middle East. I worked for the Crown Prince in Abu Dhabi. We also did some mostly marketing related, but farming itself. We farmed in the desert, built a farm in the desert. And I did a due diligence for him and all his projects all over the world. He's got lots of farms all over the world. Did some sort of went to look where he can improve, not improve, and whatever. Very interesting. But most of my physical background was in marketing. Mm-hmm. So I think why we should discuss marketing is most people ignore that. And they first think of what they can plant, what they understand to plant. And if they ignore the market, they come in a time when everybody's basically with the same type of stuff.
So how can one start doing market research before they start planting? So what are the crucial or fundamental aspects one should look at where marketing is concerned prior to production?
That's fantastic question. First of all, let me give you an example. In Botswana, when I was working there with the government and extension services, everybody wanted to plant cabbages in the winter. Two reasons. It's easier to grow black diamond morph. Everything else is not so predominant in winter. A lot of the pest is controlled by the cold climate. It made sense in some instances, but the problem is that everybody flooded the market at the same time. So our first step was always to go and look at the last 5 years of prices. Now, I know it's difficult for somebody who do not have access to those prices. You can actually call the Johannesburg or Pretoria market and they will send you a price list for 5 years. But you need to be able to work those prices. What I normally did is I took the five-year average prices on a certain product, say like 20 products. We used to go out and do 20 products and then work it back to today's rand value, because you need to do that using the CPI figures and stuff like that. But it's complicated. I understand not everybody can do that, but you'll have an idea of when is their marketing windows. So those are the... If there's a certain trend building up, you'll see it in your graphs. Even if you just go around and look at 5 years' prices, don't look at last year or the year before. Because normally, and this is quite funny, if something did very well last year, everybody plants it this year. So to try and avoid that, I would suggest it to be in a market long term, but you need to understand when to come in. I can tell you on top of my head now, something like butternuts is always scarce in September. So if you have that window of opportunity and you've identified it, then you need to go back to your land and see if you have the ability, a soil type, water, everything else to produce it. If you do not produce in a controlled environment like yourself. If you open field, you must first of all understand. And then... lastly, before you go into production, you need to do the calculations also. It's not worth your while if you're going to get 10 rand a kilo, but you only produce 2,000 bags in a hectare. Well, a little bit out of season, out of the window time, you can get maybe 8 or 7 rand a kilo, but you're going up to 5,000 bags a hectare. So all those things need to be taken into consideration before you plant. And the best is still if you can go out and get a contract from somebody which can guarantee you some sort of offtake agreement for part of your crop. To just plant blindly today and hope you have a buyer at the end of the day is a very, very sad thing which happens all over Africa, actually all over the world. Mm. I've seen farmers driving around and actually throwing the produce away after a day or two in the sun on the back of their buckies. And next to it, you find starving people which cannot even get the produce. So I think there's a big gap in bringing the market and the farmer, the producer and everything together. And I think that's something which we all need to consider.
Yeah, you touched on something very important there, that the fact that there is a gap that currently exists between the farmer and the market. And also, there's many farmers today who says, I've got produce, but I don't know where to sell. And then there's marketers or off-takers that say, we've got contracts, but we can't find farmers. So how else can we bridge this gap? Either then the farmer doing their due diligence from a marketing plan and getting an off-taker. How can we bridge that gap to ensure that both parties, the farmer as well as the off-taker or the client, can really procure from one another?
I think, Bali, the first place to start is before you farm. I think everybody waits too long. I found fantastic product and good quality product. I can give you a simple example right north. In the north of Botswana, on the Zambia, Namibia, Botswana border, there was people there use what they call, I'm trying to battle to think of the Botswana word now, but they use the floodplains to plant millet, maize. Hmm. And non-GMO, they used to get up to 6 tons a hectare, which was amazing. You know, like in the Bible times when the Nile used to flood its banks, and then the Nile withdraw, and that area there was, and they used to get 6 tons a hectare, but they had no road going out there. So when I was working with the FAO, we built them a road. And that was something where they had the ability, they had the soil, they had the right seed. Everything was fantastic. They just didn't think of the last process of how they're going to access the market. How are they going to get this product to the market? There was no roads. They sold it locally, but it was much more than they could consume. So they used to plant 1 year and then didn't plant for the next year because they had enough stock. So that, I think, is critical for everybody before you even order one seedling or start one seedling or even till 1 hectare. Get your market information 100% right. And start warming people up and go and talk to people and say, in 3 months' time, I'm going to do this. In 2 months' time, I'm going to do this. Keep them informed. And communication is key here. I think the whole time they should know. So if I'm selling your stuff or I'm a shopkeeper or I'm working with you, then I know, look, Mbali is starting in 2 weeks' time. She's starting in a week's time. I'm not going to order from anybody else. We have some sort of agreement. Let's give her a chance, or at least I know what's coming. Mm-hmm. I think people wait till it's ripe and ready, and then they start driving around looking for a market and the offtake.
Yeah. You know, I spoke to someone not so long ago when they mentioned that, you know, now it's becoming such so difficult now to get offtake agreements, because what now farmers are doing, it's just getting offtake agreements just to apply for financial aid. And once they receive that financial aid, they never hear from the offtakers, never hear from the farmers again. So it seems as if the offtake agreement is just like a letter to just get some sort of financing, and then the farmer disappears. And the other end from that offtake agreement is that some clients are becoming reluctant now in submitting or giving farmers offtake agreements because they do not have the physical product on hand. So they don't see the quality of the farmer on hand. So how can...
No, you're 100% right. We deal with that quite extensively. That's why I hammer so much on a proper bankable business plan. I think if you really want to go the full length, you need to put something in writing which going to show you at a very conservative estimate of what you're going to produce, and take that. And the banks who give out the money also need to understand if it will work or not. And I need to interview the people. But the gap between what you are saying now and the physical people, because it's very difficult. I'm a marketeer now. I'm promising farmer XYZ X amount of money, but I don't know what his final product is going to look like. And to be honest with you, no farmer can always produce. The top farmers in the world, they don't only produce class one. They produce all sort of things. And then we have act of God, hail, drought, weather, and all that other stuff also playing a part. So those are very difficult. The most successful guys out there is the guys who started small, built up a small clientele. Somebody believes in you and is willing to walk with you and willing to help you and mentor you. And that person, then you need to build up a name. That's why I always say, even if you produce a good product, a really good product, put a sticker on, even if it's a cucumber or something like that. The housewife will remember that. Because sometimes people spend a lot of money, and that's a conversation for another day. Maybe in the future you invite me back, but we could talk about post-harvest and packaging and stuff like that. Because that becomes important, but sometimes it's spent on the wrong person. You make your produce extremely attractive for the market. That guy buys it, and he throws a box away. The housewife never knows it's Green Terrace's product. So I think at the end of the day, the ones who are successful is the ones who's in the market every year at the same time with the same sort of product, and you build up a clientele. It sadly is like anything else. It doesn't come overnight. you need the resources and how can I put it? You need some sort of mentor to stay with you for 2-3 years till you find your feet. Nobody in this business, it's such a risky business. We're sitting with a product. It's not clothing where you can keep it for 6 months. It's such a risky business. We have a shelf life and a very short shelf life. And the shorter the shelf life, the better condition the housewife gets it. And that's what you want. So we're sitting with something where we really need to form partnerships and lasting partnership. And unlucky, it's built a lot on trust. So I think that's a key thing. Get started on a small scale and then build it up. And even the larger scale producers, they still make the same products. I've seen them, not the same products, they make the same mistakes. I've seen it countless times where large producers jump around from marketeer to marketeer, and they jump around from shops to shops, and they for 5 cents they will leave this one and go to the other one, which offers them 5 cents more. And then a few years down the line, they don't have anybody who trusts them anymore, because you want on our side, on the marketing side, we're in the same boat. If you promised me tomorrow you will deliver this and this and this, and it's not there, then I lose my customers, I lose sales. I have guys driving in from Durban, Pietermaritzburg, organizing trucks and everything else. And once you get a bad reputation like that more than once, we all understand a mistake, truck broke down, hail, weather, rain, whatever. But if it happens continuously, you're going to lose loyal support. I don't care if you're the biggest farm in the country. You need to be consistent with that.
Yeah. You mentioned about, the importance in which buyers look at the product, but most importantly, putting a stick on that product so that the end consumer knows your brand and trusts your brand and understands what you do. And that all relates to branding, right? So, and branding could be, let's look at it in two ways. So there's farmer A could be sending their fresh produce to the markets, which is like the fresh produce markets. And obviously they need to brand because a retailer could come there, buy and put it onto their shelves. But what about branding as well, where farmers get contracts directly with the suppliers, where packaging is not a huge concern? How would the end consumer know who produced this at the end of the day? So for a farmer to grow their brand, what advice would you give them where branding is concerned?
It's unlucky, and you mentioned it very well, and you summarized it very well, but it's unlucky. I've worked with supermarkets for quite a long time, and I was one of the largest suppliers to one of the largest supermarket chains. They're very dominant when it comes to negotiations and their branding. They would rather one of the supermarket chains buys branding rights to some products and they market it as such, and some of the others use their own branding. So it's very difficult in the supermarket itself to go in, and they're doing it because they want to expand their brand. They don't want somebody to come in there and use from XYZ's brand. The thing is with branding in total is that if you can get it, you in the supermarkets, I honestly can't advise you on anything there. Maybe you can negotiate, but you're going to make a deal with them, they're very hard on it. They try and get their own brand across. But if you're sending to the market or you're sending to a local fruit shop or you have something with someone, the nice thing about branding is that if a housewife remembers she had a very sweet and delicious lychee from this farm, they actually go back to the fruit shops and the spars and whatever. Sorry, I mentioned the brand name now. I'm not supposed to. But okay. But the supermarkets which allow individual ownership, and they come back and they say, this was asked for. So I always advise guys that nobody can produce anything, everything perfectly. So always have a generic box available as well, because you don't want to lose something. There's always a price and a market for everything. And that year you have a little bit of hail, and that year you have part of your crop which is not perfect. Don't put it in your branded box, because it takes 20 years to build up a brand and 5 seconds to break it down. Mm. So if I'm on the farm and I'm looking at the produce I'm sending away and I'm not totally happy with it, I won't pack it in my own box. I will pack it in a generic box, still have my label, my name, everything on the side to comply with all the DAF regulations, but I won't bring my brand down. I will have everything perfect in my brand, and even if I can afford it, maybe I have two brands on the market. So yes, as far as the farmers and the housewife and the supermarkets is concerned, it's very difficult that you can try and negotiate. But as far as every other marketing, it is carry your brand as far as you can, make people know about. That's also a thing I've seen when I tell them, for instance, you've got a good name. If you tell them Green Terrace is sending, they're willing to wait and say, look, I'm not going to buy. I'm waiting for that product because I know the brand. I'm not buying anything in the market. If you guarantee being here at 4 o'clock in the morning, it will be here at 6 o'clock because there's a little bit of traffic or they load it late. Just because of the brand, they're willing to wait because they know the stuff is good.
Yeah.
And that's very interesting.
And what strategy do you think is great for today for farmers to commit to? You alluded to before a farmer cultivates a product, they need to obviously do their market research based on the pricing for the past 5 years, etc. You spoke about branding, having your brand and label or packaging consistent across the market floor. Now, when it still comes to marketing, based on your experience, do you think that the fresh produce markets is still the best avenue for farmers to market their product? Or should farmers maybe develop relationships with individuals like yourself who are marketers, have 3 or 4 marketers who they should just focus on because they could get a consistent price?
Mbali, that's the sad part, is that we have such a unique system in South Africa, the fresh produce market, working on a commission system, that I don't ever want to see that go, solely for the reason that that's where the prices form. And the sad part is the price is formed on an equilibrium which is achieved from supply and demand on the markets. And then everybody else goes and bases their price on market price. So if you dilute the markets by taking all the class one product off the markets and sending it directly to the chain stores and to direct marketeers, the market price drops automatically. Plus, you're taking a big amount of supply and demand off the market. And that brings the whole price system down. So instead of a farmer negotiating for at say 60, 70 rand on a bag of carrots, they're all of a sudden looking at 40 rand minus commission, So all those things have an influence in price because the fresh produce markets will never disappear completely. But the role they play in a price discovery is so important that I think it's often underestimated by people going 100% direct. Now, the sad part is that the markets itself is so dilapidated. And the councils which owns the market is spending so little to keep it up there and repair it and bring it back to the perfect condition, that guys are bypassing the market, not because they want to, but because they have to. And that's why I said I would love to come back one day and then we can discuss the post-harvest and temperatures and the cold chain and everything else. It's so important. If you've worked like I did in a first world economy or situation in Abu Dhabi, it was absolutely fantastic. From the boat, from the container, from the farm, everything was kept in the refrigerator till the final consumer. It never went out. It was everything was perfectly controlled there. And sadly here, half our cold rooms don't work, then the other half works. And the money being spent or being put back into the marketing system by the councils is absolutely nothing. And we contribute just on Pretoria market, 220 million rand a year. I would say Joburg would be close to half a billion. So that is the problem. You can establish something with a good direct marketer, and I would advise that for part of your crop, but how do you base, on what do you base your price? And that's the question we're all battling with.
Yeah, and you alluded to the importance of cold chain in fresh produce, and because that really happens, you know, farmers send their produce to the fresh produce markets, but because of infrastructure challenges, the farmer always bears the risk or takes the risk when product is rejected, even though they might have delivered a product that is to standard and that is at the right cold chain. But like, how do we protect ourselves as farmers at the end of the day where the sales rep says, no, you didn't make any sales today because your product was bad quality. And when the farmer investigates, they see that, because my product is bad quality because it wasn't kept in a cold chain facility and therefore has really degraded in quality.
Yes, that's a very good point. You have one remedy, and that is if you kept good record keeping and you sort of have an idea of the temperature when you offload it and maybe take photos. I always advise guys, everybody dealing with, if you can, first of all, you need a very good trust relationship with your salesman. So the person selling your stuff, your agent. But if you keep your side clean, and you have some sort of record and photos and whatever, you can always report them to APAC, which is the ruling body, the Agricultural Producers Agents Council. And they will take up your plight further, because I've seen, and I definitely belong to the industry, but I've seen a lot of unscrupulous things happen. So not everybody is that honest or that willing or have the control or the knowledge even to handle the product. And I feel so sorry for the farmers, because what you said, and you alluded to it as well, is the total risk lies with the farmer. It's a very unfair situation. You go through the whole process of buying expensive seed, setting up the land, getting everything in place, looking after your product for 3 months. If you're a fruit tree farmer, sometimes up to 7-8 years before you get a return on investment. And then all of a sudden, somebody who do not have the knowledge to handle your product, the infrastructure challenges and the overall aspects on the market makes you lose everything. And that is very sad. So I would definitely work on somebody you can trust with. That's point number one. Build up a trust relationship with somebody. Secondly, make sure that you have all the knowledge about your own product. When it leaves the farm, take a photo. When it arrives, if your driver's there, with all our cell phones nowadays, it's very easy. 10-15 years ago, it was very difficult. But nowadays, you just take a snapshot of where it was offloaded, and then you have proof. And if you don't get any joy or any luck, I mean, they can come back to me. I was the chairman of the Institute of Agents for Pretoria, so I have influences, and you're willing to give my number out. If anybody's got in, I'll try and sort them out and point them in the right direction. I'm more than willing to do that.
Sure. And what is your take on direct contract agreements? For example, let's say a large food processor is working directly with a farmer, and let's say for this instance, it could be a potato farmer. If you are a farmer today, would you want to take your produce to a large food processor and purely base your marketing or your sales of your crop with that specific company? Or would you advise maybe farmers to really spread their wings and diversify their clientele a bit just to minimize risk?
Mbali, I had the advantage of traveling the world. Honestly, I've been 2-3 times to America, Europe, Far East, Middle East, Pakistan, everything farming, marketing related. Visit farmers, work there. And I would never like us to lose the South African system. When you become too reliant on the wholesalers, on the big forces in the market, on the end users, they actually dictate to you. You become an employee. You're no longer self working for yourself. You're no longer living your dream. Look, I've seen photos of you standing with muddy shoes. I've seen nice photos of you as well, but I've seen photos of you standing with muddy shoes in a field, whatever. It's not every day nice what you do, but you do it because you love it. I can tell from what I know of you that you love what you do. And if somebody comes and dictates to you that exactly this is what you must plant and this is how you should plant it and this is the, it becomes, you might as well go back and get yourself a corner office in Sandton somewhere. You're not going to do what you like. So I'm trying at all times for people to say to spread the risk. It's very difficult. Sometimes the really big farmers, they need to do an offtake agreement and make sure that at least a part of their crop is pre-sold. But I would never, ever do it 100% because I've seen it all over the world. They become your boss, they tell you what price they're going to pay, and then you have no market presence, and maybe you're not even geared. You know, somebody like that, use the potato farmer, for instance. If he's producing 100% for the let's say the frozen market, he would not have a washing machine, or he would not even budget for it. He would not set up his farms to do all those sort of things. And then 1 year when they're full, or they cancel the contract, or they say they can't go anymore, or worst comes to worst, the company supplying goes under. He goes under with them because he's got no alternative market. Nobody wants muddy potatoes on the market floor. So he's got no alternative. So I would never, ever advise anybody, even on the markets, don't go on the market alone. My optimal will be some sort of direct to cover your costs so you know you break even. And then play the market with the rest. See where you can get a good deal and try and form relationships with various people.
Mm. You mentioned that you've traveled the globe quite extensively, visiting a number of farms, understanding different markets as well. How does our South African system or market compare to that of the global world? And what is it about our system that makes it so special?
I think our system is still trying to combine a lot of third world with first world. So even if we don't like it, we're still going to have a pothole here and there and whatever. So we need to adjust our system. I don't think we at this moment we have the ability to go really all out cold chain and whatever. Also, I think if you look at our living conditions and poor people, they must also eat. So it will never be in a thing where you have a perfect like to buy. That's, you know, everybody there's got money and everybody can pay top prices. And if they don't sell, they just throw it away and make compost. I think our system is fantastic for a year. We just need to tweak it so that the farmer gets a little bit more out. There's more protection in it. And I think the supermarkets, and I'm willing to say this openly, they need to also come to the party. Because honestly, there's nothing that makes me as cross as knowing that a farmer got 5 rand a kilo and I see it being advertised at 20 rand a kilo as a special in the supermarket. I mean, what did they do? They just put it on the shelf. Mm-hmm. They also have overheads. I understand it, but they didn't take the risk. If you can't produce for them, they just go to the next person who can. If you have drought, they go to the next guy who's got water. If you have hail, they go to the next person who didn't have hail. Mm. So that's very unfair. I think they need to come to the party big time and work with people year in, year out, and stay with them. So as far as the global concept is concerned, I can tell you honestly, we've got one of the better systems. It still needs a lot of work. But I've seen in America, they're all trying to get it back. The two times I've been in the last 4 or 5 years, they were all trying to get back into a system closer that resembles the South African system more than what it does at the moment. Mm-hmm. You see small farmers' markets starting to grow up everywhere. Guys producing for their local people. They're trying to get away from the big conglomerates telling them what to produce, when to produce, and what price they're willing to pay.
Mm. Mm. And going to specifications, product specification, which is a crucial element in marketing, do you think that is doing a disservice to farmers having to produce a product to spec? We, like you mentioned, we can't tell at the end of the day what size the product is going to come out, what color it's going to come out. I mean, there's so many conditions that affect that. But of course, as well, as farmers, we always ensure that we buy the right variety with certain descriptions that we know that they're, at the end of the day, the product will weigh, for example, taking a pepper, it will weigh 150 grams or whatever the price, the weight will be. And once you start producing it, you are expecting the pepper to weigh 150 grams. So what is your take on product specifications when it has to come to selling your product to clients? Do you think having a product spec is doing a disservice to farmers? Or do you think that's how this industry should operate?
Again, you've done your homework. You're asking very good questions.
I'm a farmer.
Molly, I can't agree more with you. I can hear from this that, yes, honestly, what is extremely funny for me is that when the supermarkets are running full, all of a sudden they'll find everything wrong with your product. When it's full of, when a product is full and they cannot take anymore, even though they've got a contract with you, you'll find reject, reject, reject. When it's scarce, they're willing to oversee everything. Now, sadly, we live in a world where people buy with their eyes. It's the truth. They look at something and they see it looks nice and they will buy it like that. And people also, but at the end of the day, I think there's a lot of playroom in there. And I don't believe in a full spec. I think something which is non-negotiable is something like rot, pesticides, something that can physically harm an individual. But I mean, if a carrot is slightly skew or a lemon is a couple of millimeters too big, or like you said, the green pepper, it becomes an extremely big product because you've put 3 months of your hard work into that. And then all of a sudden, you get this email which says your product's been rejected because of this and this and this. And you know you've done your best. And that's sad in some extent. What's happening with that product? And that's what I mean. You honestly find everywhere that people are dumping product which is still perfectly good for human consumption. Or they're forcing it down. Or that poor farmer will close his doors in a few months' time. He can't sustain it anymore just because of a few millimeters on a pepper or a weight or whatever. So I agree fully with you. I think they are far too strict and they're not doing this country of ours any good, our consumers any good, or their farmers any good. I think that's a mechanism they introduced, global gap. I understand that. Now, remember with global gap, it's the part I agree fully with is the pesticides and the hygiene and everything else. I want to know that my product and traceability. If something happens to a customer which ate an orange from somebody, I want to be able to trace it back to the farmer and we can go and look at the problem. Was there a spill of pesticide? Was there something wrong? What went wrong? We want to go back to the source and find out and stop further contamination or even sickness or death from our customers. So that I understand. Mm. But if you look at a European environment, which is mostly covered in snow, so they do everything in greenhouses and the rest of the product is all imported. So they can pick a class one import from this side and I know months in advance what they're getting, and once the ship is on the sea, it's 3 weeks before it docks in, say, Rotterdam. So it's a total different environment for shoppers, supermarkets, everybody else. They can't enforce that sort of ideology on us which grows it here. So I agree with you. I think it's totally unfair and harsh from them to have so much restrictions while there's perfectly good food going to waste. And they're just pushing the prices up.
Mm. Yeah. Still on the topic of marketing, I'm just so glad that you're giving me so much to think about. And you've mentioned that, you know, there's other elements of marketing that we have to discuss, like post-harvest, etc. But still on this element of marketing, what I've also seen on the ground is that now some farmers, especially established ones that have been in the industry for a couple of years, have now moved away from vegetable farming and have gone into the more lucrative commodities like macadamia nuts, super fruits, citrus, because they are fetching higher prices in the international community. What is your take with farmers moving away from supplying locally and now looking to focus on more international markets? Isn't that a worrying concern for local production in South Africa?
Yeah, it's quite funny is that I think some of the most staunch Afrikaans farmers was the biggest supporters of the previous president, solely for the reason he pushed the rand quite low. And if you get paid in dollars, it's something. So the dollars coming in, and if you produce something, look, your outlook is very different if you go into the export market. Vegetables is very difficult because at the moment, especially with COVID, you could get quite cheap air freight transport. Do a pallet here or there, have it fresh on the market the next day. But with flights going down during COVID and everything, that industry nearly collapsed. So it is worrying, but I also, and that's my biggest argument, is that we're sitting in SADC with 250 million people. And my biggest problem is that there's so much rules, regulations, and red tape surrounding this that we don't see the biggest market on our front door. And we have the SADC protocol, which was implemented in 1996 already, and we now in 2021. Not being implemented. It's political will which should implement it. I don't think Botswana should be allowed to close their borders. I don't think Zambia should be allowed to close their borders. What they're doing at the moment is they're using something called infant industry protection, which is a five-year protection, which started in 1979, which if we count exactly the same way, that would make me about 21, and I don't look 21. So they're pushing a five-year limit to I don't know what. They're bending the rules to suit themselves. But I think in SADC itself, we have so much opportunities, which at the moment nobody sees. They're closing and opening borders. They're ruling and controlling stuff. It's just mind-boggling to me that we have countries that are on our doorstep like Zimbabwe where they have hunger and they can't supply themselves. And we have something on our side and we can't get it through the border. So that's point number one. I would look at Africa if I was a farmer, and I would look at a local thing. As far as the export is going, I think that's where the big money is, if you profit-driven. But as far as a country, I think we need to look at our own food security. And there's going to be a time in the near future where our population is going to reach the level where we cannot actually export anymore. We should look at ourselves first. So, yes, it's a very valid point. I cannot give you a 100% correct answer, but I think you're touching on something which we need to consider for the future.
Yeah. So what are you busy with now, besides the marketing element in what you do? What else are you working on or participating in the sector?
No, it's basically at this moment, I've got my family involved with me. My son is working with me, so I'm trying to teach him everything I've known. Wow. And we're building going forward. So, yes, it's mostly marketing related. But I would like to, you know, have an outreach, maybe specifically on business plan, planning, post-harvesting and stuff like that. If there's emerging farmers out there and look, I cannot do it for 100 people. I will only be working for you. But maybe we should get together and have a seminar or a workshop one day. Mm. Just simple things. Work with somebody where we just go through and I can give a small lecture on just how to plan your your crops from a marketing viewpoint, what to look at, where is the windows, what is there not to do. I would like to get more involved in that because I must be honest with you, it wasn't the best money, but it was most happiest time of my life when I was in development. Ooh. And the nice thing about development, and that's what you farmers see every day, is that if you put a little bit of effort in, you see something after 3 months, after 2 months, you see something there. If you're just in the middle marketing, maybe your bank account grows a little bit, but nothing else. So it's really nice when I was in development to come to an area, bush, and then a year or two later, there's a project there and people are growing stuff and the village is eating and stuff like that. So yes, if you, I don't know how involved you are or how interested there will be, but if there's ever a workshop, we can put this together and maybe do a small lecture and hand out notes on how for people to start going and how to do the simple business plan and stuff like that. That I wouldn't mind going into something like that, yes.
Awesome. That's great to hear. I think, thank you for that. That's something I'll definitely take up on. And yeah, we can arrange something and prepare it because I think the industry needs it. And whether it's emerging farmers or farmers that are already established, it's not too bad at the end of the day to always have a refresher course, you know, to always double check yourself as a farmer, as a business person, if you're still online with your strategy. And I think everybody, especially now that COVID has changed so many things, I think everybody needs to have that second opinion or relook at their business model and strategy to ensure that they could be able to keep farming, especially for many years to come. So thank you for that.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned COVID. Sorry. I just want to add to what we discussed earlier with the branding and everything else. Now with COVID, have you seen how many elderly people started to order online? It's something they've never done before because they thought the technology, they didn't want to learn the technology. You know, they already passed it and they like to shake the hand of the butcher and ask for a certain cut of meat and whatever. But with the fear of coming back with COVID, a lot of them stayed at home and they ordered. And I think with that, your branding is going to become much more and more. Look at Amazon. I mean, that was when I was studying in Botswana, I was doing my MBA then, and we had no books. I mean, I couldn't walk into a academic bookshop and buy whatever books. I know you guys don't even know what books is anymore. Everything is Google. But in those days, I had to use a book. And I couldn't buy it. And Amazon just started. It was early 2000s. And it was actually a couple of years before Google. So I ordered everything from Amazon. And now today it's one of the biggest companies in the world. It's unbelievable where they went to. So I can see this industry. So if you have a brand name and Green Terrace or ZZ or something else, that people who order will order according to brand. They will tell you, have you got the same tomatoes as last week? Mm-hmm. I would like that delivered to me because it's been the best tomatoes I've had, or the sweetest prunes or the plums or peaches or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, is going to be a big factor. It's going to be a game changer over the next 10 to 20 years. Also, while we were down in COVID, my Zambian, Angolan, Congolese, Botswana buyers, Zimbabwean buyers had no opportunity to fly up and down and come and physically inspect the product. So first of all, they started buying on trust. They bought from people they knew they could trust, which will load them the stuff they ordered, the stuff they wanted, and the freshest stuff possible. So they built up that trust. They all of a sudden very quickly learned who to deal with and who not to deal with. But branding became increasingly important. And I can see that for the foreseeable future, they're going to save themselves that airplane ticket and they're going to save themselves the driving down and whatever. And they're going to continue with the way they're buying at the moment because it worked. Mm-hmm. And once something works, it's very difficult to change it back. So the thing where people come and they want to see it and taste it and feel it and whatever is still there, but it's going to, I think, go down a little bit. So that's going to be very important for marketing in the future.
Thank you so much, Julian. I really appreciated this conversation, and I can't wait to have you back again to discuss post-harvesting, cold chain, and yeah, anything else we might have missed in today's conversation.
Fantastic, Bali, and good luck. And it was wonderful giving my small input to your audience.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Your feedback is always important. Therefore, please rate and review this podcast. You can follow me on social media at Mbali Nwoko on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, as well as YouTube. Should you wish to contact me directly, kindly send me an email at info@mbalinwoko.com. Look out for next week's episode. Until then, take care.